Starhawk. So stay tuned for the incomparable radio zine.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Full Gallop, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs through Saturday, October 8th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. Full Gallop is a portrait of Diana Vreeland, who stood at the center of American style for 5 decades. As editor of Harper's Bazaar and Vogue magazines and as a member of the International Cafe Society, she chronicled the extraordinary people and events of her time. This play is a portrait of Vreeland at a turning point in her life. Again, that's Full Gallop, now through October 8th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Friends of Noise Benefits Show on Sunday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Friends of Noise formed to create more opportunities for youth to produce, perform, and gather at all-ages music shows and raise awareness for the need of an all-ages venue. Performing at this benefit will be Explode Into Colors, Wampire, and Hugo Berlin. Again, that's Friends of Noise Benefit Show, Sunday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Mississippi Studios, 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 9:02 a.m. Coming up on Waterworld, host Kristen Younts reports on water policy near and far. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary, followed at 10:15 with Flashpoints with Greg Palast, an election crimes report. At 11, a Radio Geekly dives into a discussion of the progressive movement within geek culture. And thanks, KBOO members, for all of your generous support. Remember to pay your pledge. And now, as promised, Waterworld.
The sound of the city, ink marks the sky. A rumble not humble, it mumbles and flies. This place ain't made for people, nah, it's made for machines. These drones spew gray when they bleed. Tags like flags set the city on fire. Gray smoke, they choke, we taking it higher. We trace the slate, we create, transpire. They try to extinguish, but we birth desire. Color is the mother of hope. We paint the slope, using tone as we zone and climb this rope. We like planetary moans. Grab your telescope, universal unknown. Dialing your phone. They shame the city gray, so we grab our paints. They slander our names, but we really saints. They can't taint or erase.
All right. Welcome to another edition of Waterworld. My name is Kristen Yount, and I have a guest today from the Port of Portland. She's on the line. But first, I just want to take a minute to let you know that indeed I was part of a fellowship project exchange with country of Pakistan. So I was selected by the International Center for Journalism to go to Pakistan and learn from Pakistani journalists and members of the Pakistani government and also heads of NGOs there. Our partner was a group called UKS, that's UKS, and that project is pretty much solely responsible for looking at the way media portrays women in Pakistan. And so if you are interested, you can definitely look for UKS online. It's UKS and the International Center for Journalism. That's ISCJ. And so I just got back last week. I intended to have former mayor of Karachi and investigative journalist of Dawn newspaper on today, but something came up, so we will have him on next month on November 4th, I think is the date. So stay tuned for that. If you have an interest in learning more about his work, his name is Fahim Zakhar Khan. And his most recent article can be found on www.dawn.com, and it is called the article is called "Greed Incorporated: Bahira Town, Karachi, Greed Incorporated" as a primer to learn about basically a city that has no government, a city of 24 million people that has no functioning city government. So with that in mind, I'm going to just kind of switch gears to our own government here in Portland. As people may know, the CERCLA project or the Portland Harbor Superfund site, the EPA had released its proposed plan. There was a comment period. All the comments, when all was said and done, there was over 5,000 comments submitted to the EPA, which definitely set a national record. Part of the comments that were brought up by community groups and individuals was the operation of a CDF in Terminal 4 in St. John's. And what a CDF is basically when they take dredged material from the bottom of the river and put it into a dump, and there is a permeable berm placed in front of the dump so that the material, in theory, cannot flow back into the river. People who were against this plan want to see the hazardous material dredged out of the river and treated and rendered inert and buried somewhere off-site. And up until very recently, the Port of Portland, as I understand, was very much in favor of having a CDF. And they recently came out and said that they don't. So it's good news for the people that were against a CDF in the Portland Harbor. And I have on the phone Jessica Hamilton. Jessica, are you there?
I am.
So why don't you just take a minute to let our listeners know about your role at the port and the official statement about the CDF, if you don't mind.
Sure. Thanks, Kristen, and thanks for having me. My name is Jessica Hamilton. I'm the director for Harbor Environmental, which essentially means that I manage the team here at the port that is responsible for managing the port's liabilities and projects associated with the Portland Harbor Superfund site. You mentioned the comments that were submitted to EPA, and I'd just like to again echo that it's very gratifying from the port's perspective to hear from the community and to know how many Portlanders care about Portland Harbor Superfund site. We're hopeful that EPA will be doing the hard work that it has to do between now and the issuance of the record of decision, and thoughtfully and seriously considering all of the comments that Portlanders have submitted on this very important project. The Confined Disposal Facility, or CDF, as people who follow Superfund talk about it, is a project that the port was required to evaluate as part of its early action project around Terminal 4. The port completed, and this is something that not very many people know, the port completed an early action of the removal of about 13,000 cubic yards of contaminated sediment from its facility at Terminal 4. We also did some capping there in order to make sure that we were addressing some of the more contaminated sediment. That contaminated sediment was actually hauled off-site to a landfill. As part of that project, EPA required the port to complete what's called a 60% design report for the confined disposal facility. We did that. I think that there is a perception that the port has been in favor of a CDF because we did this work, and I just wanted to clarify that while we performed this work because EPA required us to do it and it was part of our process, that the port has been thinking about whether the decision to have a CDF at Terminal 4 is the right decision for the port and for the community. And so I can appreciate that this decision by the port feels to those externally as a monumental shift in our position. It's actually fairly consistent with what we've been thinking about for a long time. We do believe that a confined disposal facility can be engineered to be protective and would be constructed safely, but we also have heard loud and clear from the community that this is something that is not what they would like to see, and we're not interested in taking on the long-term management of a facility that our neighbors adamantly oppose. And, you know, the other thing is just, frankly, that we consider the economic risks and the various uncertainties with the approval of the CDF, the financing and the funding of it, who would be utilizing the CDF, and, you know, both the community aspect and the financial and risk aspect drove us to making the ultimate decision that the port would not be sponsoring a CDF at Terminal 4.
Awesome. That was such a great way to put it. It really clarifies a lot of things in my mind and hopefully for our listeners as well. Just wanted to quick follow-up question. When you were talking about risk management and the cost of having a CDF as part of the reasons why the port part of the reasons why the port doesn't want it. Were there seismic concerns with that risk assessment? Do you know?
We evaluated the seismic issues as part of that 60% design report, which is an engineering report. It's pretty detailed and complex. And I can't recall off the top of my head what level earthquake we were required to design towards. But we did meet that standard, and, you know, again, we wouldn't have been looking at it as seriously as we did if we didn't think that it could be built safely and within the specifications. So, you know, seismic safety and seismic resiliency is something that we consider in all of our projects, and it is something that should be considered here in Portland Harbor as we're thinking about what the right solution is. But I do think that there are some engineering solutions to that. And so while we considered seismic safety, that's not the risks that I was talking about for us. It was really more of the port's not in the business of managing hazardous waste over the long term.
Right.
And so undertaking a long-term disposal facility takes us pretty far afield from our actual mission of moving people and goods throughout our world. So for us, spending the additional financial outlay to manage this risk long-term was not a good business decision or the right decision for the community.
Wow, absolutely. Yeah, that is definitely a perspective that I didn't really even consider. Maybe it would be sort of like a client situation where perhaps other PRPs would be asking to use the CDF as well, and the port would have to maintain it. Is that something that was kind of on the table?
Yeah, well, the other reason why this didn't get pursued immediately during the course of the early action is it became quickly apparent that the contaminated sediment from Terminal 4 would not be sufficient to fill the capacity of the CDF at Terminal 4. And so in order to meet that capacity demand, we would have to be receiving material from other parts of the river. And you know, that in and of itself creates some risk, both from a financial standpoint as well as, you know, it moving hazardous waste that the port bears no responsibility for into an area where the port would obtain responsibility for the long-term management.
Well, I know that thousands of signatures on petitions were handed in to the port directly, I believe, and as well as official comments asking for the CDF to not be in the record of decision that hopefully will come out at the end of the year. So it's just, it is very, as you said, it's very reassuring to know that the public comment period, the public comment process, and the Superfund process in this case did work, at least in terms of the Port of Portland's reaction. And I really wanted to shine a light on that, because, you know, it's not too often that you hear people's voices actually making a difference. And I really appreciate you coming on today and talking to me and our listeners about this issue.
Sure. Thanks so much, Kristen. I really do appreciate the opportunity and the invitation, and happy to come back.
Awesome. Thank you so much. All right. That was Jessica Hamilton, and she is with the Port of Portland, and she oversees the business of maintaining the Portland Harbor Superfund site and dealing with, obviously, risks and construction of remediation techniques that will be happening with the Superfund cleanup over the next 20 or 30 years, maybe. And so really awesome that somebody from the Port of Portland would actually come on and talk to us. I did ask Steve Novak to come on and make a comment about the city's official word on the Superfund cleanup. City of Portland is a potentially responsible party. It is possible that the city will have to pay for some of the remediation costs associated with repairing the river. And so in light of that, they did make a comment, a public comment, which will be officially available when the rod of decision is out. The record of decision, the rod, comes out at the end of the year, hopefully. But I did want Mr. Novak to call in and make a comment about what the city has told the EPA. From what I understand, having seen the letter, the city of Portland is basically on board with the entirety of the proposed plan that was put out by the EPA. Many groups in the city, including the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group, the Portland Harbor Community Coalition, Riverkeeper, Yakima Tribes Fisheries, and Audubon Society were very conflicted by the EPA's proposed plan. And it was interesting to hear that actually interesting for me to read that the city was completely okay with the plan, as far as I read. So I really wanted Novak to call today. So just so the listeners know, I know people have called in and asked for his response, and there is a little bit time in the show. Perhaps he'll call. And I would invite you to call if you have. If you did submit a comment during the official comment period, and you want to talk about what you said in those comments, you can call 503-231-8187 and talk about that. If you have a comment about the Superfund site at all, I do invite you to call. And coming up later in a few minutes, I will be playing an interview that I did with Beulah Walker from the Detroit Water Brigade. So yeah, in Detroit, I don't know if how aware people are, but there have been massive floods happening in Detroit. And she'll go into why that is. But a lot of people in Detroit who have had their water cut off and now their sewers aren't working are really feeling like the city management is forcing them out of their homes in a very direct, violent, structural way, at making it impossible for people to stay in their homes. Yeah, so maybe we'll just go over to that interview now. And this is Beulah Walker with the Detroit Water Brigade, and this is Water World. You're listening to KBOO Portland. That's 90.7, www.kboo.fm on the web.
The sound of the city, ink marks the sky. A rumble not humble, it mumbles and flies. This place ain't made for people, nah, it's made for machines. These drones spew gray when they bleed. Tags like flags set the city on fire. Gray smoke, they choke. We taking it high. We trace the slate, we create trains.
All right, so this is Beulah Walker, and she is with the Detroit Water Brigade, and she is here on the show to tell us about what's going on in the city of Detroit. Take it away.
Hi. Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening. I'm just going to, I'm not sure if anybody familiar with Detroit water shutoffs, but I'm going to give a little segment, then I'm going to fast forward to what's going on today. March 2014, the Detroit Water and Sewer Department announced a massive water shutoff campaign that they were going to do to the city of Detroit residents for non-payment. And so what that system was, instead of every 3 months, the citizens of Detroit got a water bill, it went through every month. And when it became monthly, 2014, that's when the water bills became astronomical. We talking about $75 to $100, $150 per month for a family. Now they average $250 to $300. So they averaged, 2014, they averaged 3,000 families were shut off per week. This campaign went all the way on up until August 2014 because of the mass protests internationally. August 2014, they did a 30-day moratorium on water shutoffs, and they stopped the water shutoffs for 30 days. They picked the water shutoffs back up September 8th, 2014, and the bankruptcy court, Judge Steve Rowe, made a ruling that he would not stop the water shutoffs, and if he could stop them, he wouldn't. So September 8th, 2014, Judge D. Rowe under Detroit bankruptcy filed a motion to continue the water shutoffs. So year 2015, Homeridge got another $1 million to continue the water shutoffs. So it went from $5.62 million to another million 2015. And just recently, 2016, Homeridge contract was doubled to continue the water shutoff. But let's talk about the suffering of the people when their water is shut off. People get shut off for little as a penny. People get shut off a little for $20, $30. The water bills are unaffordable. Within a calendar year, the city of Detroit had four increases within a calendar year from 2014 to 2015 of 8.9% of water rates on top of whatever else is going on. The city of Detroit residents are fighting over lights, gas, water, telephone. The data shows we are 60% in extreme poverty. African-Americans are being denied employment in the rapid numbers. And if you do have a job, it's minimum wage, slim to none. So, and that's for college-educated people as well. People with master's degrees, doctor's degrees cannot find employment if you are African-American in the city of Detroit. Predominantly, 58% of the jobs that are held in the city of Detroit are held by Caucasians, and that's just the truth. But fast forward to the flooding that we just had last week, the massive flooding that we had last week. We had 6 days of flooding, 2 to 3 feet of water. Governor Snyder, when he filed bankruptcy for the city of Detroit, the Detroit Water and Sewage Department, and the entire city of Detroit, he laid off the water workers that operated the pumps on the freeway and in the sewers, and he shut the pumps down 2014. So when we have rain, it causes flooding, massive flooding, and people's basements are flooded, businesses are flooded. And this last week, we had 6 days of flooding. So Governor Snyder gave direction to the Detroit Water and Sewage Department, which is now Great Lakes Water Region Authority, to open up the pumps. So the pumps have been shut down since 2014. And these mass floodings cause people to not to go to work. The freeways were flooded all the way up to the bridges. And he said it didn't make good business sense to employ people to operate the pumps when we haven't had a flood in forever. Well, the purpose of the water workers is to keep the pumps going 24/7, whether we have a flood or not, so we won't have a flood. So he made a business decision in 2014 to lay off the department water workers, outsource them to Veolia, North Veolia, and when he outsourced them, North Veolia could give a crap about the city flooding because they don't live here. They don't live in Michigan. They don't lay their head in Detroit. And they're just a consulting company who operates a private gang 24/7, 7 days a week. So never mind the people that live in the city of Detroit and the outside Detroit. Flooding, just massive flooding. I'm talking about funeral homes were flooded out. Businesses were closed. Schools were closed. And due to social media, with the outrage of the pumps being closed, and the activists such as Detroit Water Brigade and other organizations, he opened up the pumps and the water subsided and the rain stopped. It seems like every time we have massive water shut off, it rains and it floods. And I'm so happy that it works out that way because Governor Snyder and these emergency managers, they have no idea the impact of laying off a water worker. For some reason, he feels that they're unionized, they make too much money, and we just get rid of them. But back to the people. We get phone calls every day, all day. We just had a 87-year-old lady who lost her house last week due to an $8,000 water bill. Her name is Ms. Vivian Logan. She was a client. Well, she is a client of ours that we submitted her name March of 2016. We submitted Ms. Vivian Logan as 5 candidates that the Detroit Water and Sewage Department, they wanted to do a pilot program and help 5 people, and we submitted 5 clients. They say they would help them. They only helped it 2 out of the 5. The rest of them are shut off. Ms. Vivian Logan has been in her house for 45 years. She suffered a heart attack and a stroke March of 2016 when they threatened to cut her water off. Detroit Water Brigade got involved, and we delayed it for 6 months, but still they cut it off. And they told her that she was not a candidate for any assistance because her income was $600 too much. Her monthly income is $1,500. What can you do with $1,500? So she has lost her house that she raised her 7 kids in, her grandchildren, and she has to go live in a senior citizen apartment in Southfield, Michigan. So it's just a tactic to get citizens of Detroit out. She's been here for 45 years. Now she has to move out to Southfield, Michigan, which is horrible. We have another client who is bedridden. We've been servicing her for 2 years. She is bedridden, and she has a colostal bag. She has not had water in 2 years. Her landlord is and still responsible for the water bill, and the landlord refuses to pay the water bill. And she continues, thank God, she continues to stay in the house, and the landlord can't put her out because they haven't paid the water bill. But still, she lives without water, and she's bedridden. And Detroit Water Brigade is trying to get resources to have her moved out because we can't pick her up and move her. We're trying to get resources and help to have her move out and find adequate housing. But the struggle for adequate low-income housing is slim to none in the city of Detroit. Low-income housing is being pushed out. It got privatized by the mayor's office this year. So this is another tactic to get citizens of Detroit out. And I have another client who called today, single mother of three children, unemployed. Water bill, $818. She, too, is a victim. Her income is too much money. She makes $7.25 an hour. How is that too much money? $7.25 an hour with three kids? She's also college educated. These horror stories get worse and worse. They don't get any better. They get worse. The phone calls become treacherous. We have people with diabetes. People can't take their medication. People can't bathe. We had one client named Sharon Walls. She had to have her water cut on 3 times illegally because she had boils on her body. And she couldn't wash up with bottled water. She had to have fresh water. So we had to step in. Detroit Water Brigade had to step in and plead. And when we talk to the government entities here, we are pleading with them. I just want everybody to know that Detroit Water Brigade, we are a humble group of people. We are always on our hands and knees begging the government, the Detroit Water Service Department, stop shutting off water. It gets worse and worse and worse. And people who are listening, like, why won't Detroit stand up? Why do they continue to take these beat downs? When you've been beat down by emergency management, Michigan, Detroit Public Schools been under emergency management for 15 years. So it started 15 years ago. Now, 2014, the entire city of Detroit is under consent decree with the state of Michigan. The entire city of Detroit is under emergency management. So when you got 700,000 people who are being beat up economically, it's hard to get up and fight back when you're being beaten every which way. You can't come up for water. Well, you don't have any water to come up for. So people are like, why won't Detroit stand up? The world is watching. I get phone calls from all type of countries, Spain, England, Netherlands. Detroit Water Brigade get phone calls from Ireland. Ireland is a big supporter of Detroit residents. But they like, why does the city of Detroit keep taking these beatings? You can't stand up when you are beaten every which way at the dinner table, at the gas tank, educating your children, no health care. People have fundraisers, thousands and thousands of dollars, churches, organizations, and they fly to Africa. Africa is right here next door. I have nothing against the native land. I would love to go visit Africa. But from what I see, Africa is beautiful, and they have tons of help in Africa. Now, I already know about the rapes and the murders and the militants over there in Africa, but the rapes and the murders here is the United States government upon the people. They took over our waterfront. They took over our public parks. They have all type of rules and regulations to where you go to the park. You can't park your car. You got to walk. Either ride your bike. You can't park your vehicle, if you have one, in public parks. 2016, I believe this year, school year, they finally took Detroit Public Schools. They took them, and now it's called Detroit Public Community Schools, so that's gone. But the impact of living without water is the worst thing that could ever happen to you. You can, people... We've had 3 clients that die. We have one client, her hair has fallen out due to stress and worry. We have one client that was featured on Detroit News. Her name was Dakota Booker. She died this year, May 2016. She suffered a massive heart attack. Her water bill was $173 a month, and she got $800 a month in Social Security disability. She died of a massive heart attack in her early 40s. People are losing their children over this water. If your water is shut off, Child Protective Services right around the city of Detroit, and if your yard is dug up, you get a knock at the door. They want to know if your children are safe. Come take your children. Because they want to paint you as an irresponsible parent, you're an irresponsible adult, and we come to take your children. And we already know what happens in Child Protective Services. It ain't for the benefit of the children. So I just want to encourage everyone, get involved with water rights, because it is the new goal. It's the new mecca. It is the new mine. They're not going to stop. If they did it to Detroit, they'd do it to California. They'd do it to Chicago. They'd do it anywhere. Detroit is the platinum poster child of what is to come. If they did it to, well, they did do it to us, and they conquered it and they mastered it. Detroit is the blueprint to what's going to happen in New York. Anywhere. People don't understand. These people will not stop at nothing. And that's all I want to say. Thank you for your support.
A different kind of star falls here.
And the beast that sleeps while we soldiers creep, splashing life onto the barriers, birth to breach. The powers that be can't see our reach. We defy all the lies they teach.
All right, so this is Water World. My name is Kristen Yount, and that was Beulah Walker with the Detroit Water Brigade. And I just wanted to point out that, you know, she mentioned that 58% of the working population of Detroit is white, but 85% of the population is black. So essentially, later on in the interview, she explained to me that mostly the people that work in the city of Detroit don't live there. They live in the suburbs, and they drive in, you know, work, collect their check, and leave. So the only, there's no economy, local economy. So the local economy, which is Afro-American, is not being supported by the working economy that uses Detroit as a place of business. And that's a huge issue. Also, as far as affordable housing, Portland has its own housing emergency right now. And where in a place like Detroit, where housing projects were state run for so long, actually up until this decade, they actually were just sold off recently in the past few years to private contractors, private entities. And guess what? All the Section 8 recipients were told to leave. So the state financed affordable housing system in Detroit was sold, and everybody that lived in those buildings had to leave. And all the people that moved in were white folks who wanted, you know, to work closer, or wanted to live closer to where they work. So it's that's the issue. And so for the people who remain there, having your water shut off and having, you know, the waterworks so vastly understaffed that the streets are actually flooding, and not because of poor construction or poor infrastructure, because they simply don't want to have people working there. You know, one of the few jobs that actually has benefits and, you know, working for the government, those jobs have been eliminated. And as a result, there's flooding there. So it just really goes to say, to show that it's not just a matter of people don't pay their bills and they're getting shut off. No, they're actively trying to move these people out of where they live. And there's a word for that. And if you know the word for that, you can call 503-231-8187 and we can talk about it. I think it is relevant for people in Portland to hear what is going on in Detroit. For the most part, when our water bills and our sewer bills went way up in Portland, people who couldn't pay them just simply left their houses and moved into apartments. And so many people have had to leave the city of Portland because of things like this, but it just, no one ever connected the dots with it. And the example in Detroit is so large that you can't not see it. So that's why I wanted to have her on to talk about that. And once I figure out how to edit my Water World page, I will put up the full interview between Beulah Walker and myself so that you can hear it. She has a lot to say. One of the other things that she said was that the state of Michigan kicked the can to the federal government, and there was a bill, a proposal in front of the Senate that asked for $100 million in aid to Flint, Michigan, to have their water pipes replaced. If you don't know the story of Flint, the water pipes have been corroding, and the city of Flint has been poisoned, literally poisoned with lead. You can tell. I know people who have been to Flint, and you can tell by walking around the people who have been drinking the water because they are sick and they are dying. So there was a proposal to have $100 million sent to Flint, and there were three Republican senators who blocked it, and one of them is Mike Lee. And Mike Lee is the sitting Republican senator in Utah, and I just wanted people to know that he is running again with a massive lead against Misty Snow, who is the Democratic contender for that Senate seat in Utah. She criticized his stance, and so that's that. You know, coming up, we have an election. People in this country have a chance to get these people out of Congress who consistently speak against people's basic human rights and rights to water. So let's see if I had anything else. You can find Detroit Water Brigade. It's on Twitter. It's on Facebook. So is Water World. It's at KBOO Water World. Next month, we'll be talking to former mayor of Karachi and Dawn reporter Fahim Zakir Khan. You can read Bahria Town Karachi, Greed Incorporated as a primer. It is online at www.dawn.com. Bahria Town Karachi, Greed Unlimited, Greed Incorporated. Sorry, I have a cold. I'm not going to lie. All right, so we have Deanna on the phone, and let's see what she has to say. Hi, Deanna.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for your work. This is the most important issue in the world today because privatization of water is the end of everybody here. As you know, I'm heading out to Sacred Stone Camp tomorrow in North Dakota. The same effort to protect water and keep it from being poisoned by oil pipelines is the same as what happened in Detroit, is the same as what's happening in Flint. And apparently, our governor is making some kind of a deal to permit Nestle to bottle the water, even though the people along the Columbia voted against that. We have to understand that it's locally is where we activate, but we have to understand this is a worldwide problem, and people cannot sit and just watch it go by. We have to get involved. So thank you so much for your work.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for calling in, Deanna. What is your role at Standing Rock this coming
I'm
up?
I'm going really as an observer. I'm working with a couple of people in Portland who are members of the indigenous community that's going out there. People may know Philip Killary, who has organized the two protests, or not protests, but rallies in support of Standing Rock here in Portland recently, one on the 9th, I believe, and then one on the 25th of September. And you know, there's been very little, I think, on mainstream media about the fact that there are between 7,000 and 10,000 folks camped at out at Cannonball, North Dakota, to keep the Dakota Access Pipeline from being dug underneath the Missouri and through the sacred burial sites of the Standing Rock Sioux near their reservation. If people who are listening do not know about that, which would be amazing to me by now, because they've been there since April, and it's been quite well publicized on social media, I think, since early August. But in any case, if people don't know about it, they can Google standingrock.org and find out about it. And we'll be raising funds to help the people who plan to stay all winter and pray and be peaceful and not move until that pipeline is stopped. And, of course, it's not the last pipeline. It's just the next one. So thank you again. And anything you'd like to add to this, I'm still sitting here listening.
Thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for all you're doing, you know, paying attention. It's so important. I'm just doing some, I'm just looking at the interwebs, and I'm looking up Sue Snyder, who is married to Michigan Governor Snyder, and I was told that she is a CEO of Nestle. So when you see state governments giving way to a corporation like Nestle to come in and go ahead and help themselves to our water supplies, then it's something, it's not a state congressional act. It's nothing that you can ask your representative to advocate on your behalf. It's a unilateral decision on the part of the governor to do this. And what better way to sell bottled water than to poison an entire population with lead? I mean, I just really hope that people see this correlation and realize that it's really not too late. Unlike a lot of water supplies that have been destroyed by fracking and over irrigation and damming and things like this, the water supply around Detroit and around Portland is like really good. It's like really good water. It's just the infrastructure in Flint that is poor. And it is, it can be easily remediated and fixed just simply by replacing the main pipes there in Flint. So I just really want people to do their homework and look into this more. So yes, this is Water World. My name is Kristen Yount. This is KBOO Radio. It's 90.7 FM. And let's see. I want you to call if you have a comment about the Superfund site at the Portland Harbor, or if you have a comment, any inside views on what's going on in Detroit. You can call 503-231-8187. And as I said, I did ask Steve Novick to call in and give his two cents about what what the city of Portland's stance is on the EPA Superfund proposed plan. And from what I have read in the letter that was given to me, is that the city of Portland completely stands behind the proposed plan that the EPA put out, which many community groups have said is woefully inadequate to protect human health. So hopefully we will hear from him, but I'm not holding my breath because it's like the third time I've asked him. So that's what you get. All right. So this is, again, the number is 503-231-8187. So let's see. Yes, I was in Karachi, Pakistan last week. And Karachi is a place where, like Detroit, there is a lack of city management. When there's a power vacuum, oftentimes the decision making goes into the hands of people who may not have the people, the population's best interests in mind. And that is clearly the case in Karachi. Unlike the U.S., there are many political parties operating in not just on a national level in Pakistan, but in regional levels. So in a city like Karachi, there might be a few political parties jockeying for power. And so because of this, elections, local elections, are so much more politicized than they are here. And the actual mayor that was elected is sitting in jail. And as a result of that, there are very little city services happening in Karachi. It's literally running itself I don't even know what a good metaphor is. But so there are a lot of small mafias that are running the city services. And in a way, it's good because if these a lot of these places wouldn't have any water at all if it weren't for the water tank mafia delivering water to these neighborhoods. It's wild. And that's a lot. That's a lot. You know, I'm still wrapping my head around it, and I'll be able to make a fuller report next month. It looks like we have a caller. Thank you so much for calling, Mitch.
Well, I wanted to thank you, Kristen, because you've broken through a template here. I love KBOO, but the one thing that has always aggravated me is that when there is a call for listeners to act and call their legislators, up until you have just done this and said that you've invited Steve Novick on to express his views and defend them, because I find them indefensible. But we could have been doing this with Senators Wyden and Merkley, who constantly take our support for granted because of how dreadful the Republicans are in their policies, and yet they sell us out with every trade deal. And I don't hear other hosts saying what you said, which is that you have time and again invited this man, Steve Novick, a Portland City Council commissioner, onto the show. And while he is desperate to win his campaign against Chloe Udalley, and he's spending tons of money on consultants, he won't walk into a community radio station and defend his views. And I think it's so important what you've done, and I encourage you to keep doing it. And another person or organization to call in and ask how they feel is 1,000 Friends of Oregon, because they are ostensibly a nonprofit out to defend the state's natural resources. And yet a few summers ago, I attended one of their fundraising events where Mr. Novick was quite the toast of the environmental protection wing of Portland, and yet nobody asked him about his statements to Willamette Week about how there is an acceptable level of post-cleanup toxic pollution that will remain in the Portland Harbor. And so, again, I just think that it's terrific what you're doing. I encourage you to keep doing it, and I hope you take it to the senatorial level, because as a constituent who has written to Senator Merkley and Senator Wyden, I can tell you that all we ever get back are automated template letters that do not acknowledge any of the points we make. So, thank you.
Thanks for calling. And I just want to clarify that I simply made the information available, and as far as calling people to action, that's on you. I certainly wasn't doing that, but I'm just putting it out there so you have what you need to know. And I just Mitch mentioned the senatorial race in the United States, and I just wanted to point out that Misty K. Snow is running for Senate in Utah. She is a transgendered individual. And the Democratic Party has completely left her out of funding. So there are different fundraising activities that senators, they do fundraising for each other. If they have a good base where they are living, they will definitely kick money to other states, other races in other states where maybe a Democrat isn't doing so well. And in Utah, the Republican incumbent, who out and out asked for the Senate to leave the people of Flint with no potable water is running at a 66% lead over Misty Snow in Utah. And our other senators that are well established in their seats, our other Democrat senators that are well established in their seats, are doing nothing to help her. And she is definitely somebody who has come out in favor of water rights and human rights when in respect to clean water and access to water. And so I just wanted to ask the question, how do people feel about when senators do all this fundraising for each other and they're kicking money across state lines and support across state lines, but Utah is so close to Oregon, and yet Wyden does nothing to support her. And I'm just really curious about that. Obviously, she's running as a Democrat. So, and if, you know, if I'm mistaken, please do call 503-231-8187. So that's, again, Misty K. Snow for U.S. Senate in Utah and her underfunded campaign. That's just what I wanted to point out. So let's see. So I was talking about Karachi. So I was in Pakistan, and the city of Karachi has no city management at all. So similar to Detroit. And so they have literally the mafia running it. And that is good because people can actually drink water. But it's bad because, you know, when the mob tells you what to do and there is no restrictions and they tell you what you have to pay and what, you know, there's no recourse. And I just want to throw it out there that the people of Detroit have been fighting this tooth and nail. Like, there wouldn't be court decisions about whether or not this city needs to pay for water or the city needs to stop turning off people's water. There wouldn't even be a court case if people weren't fighting. So I just think it's important for people to know that there is resistance to these shutoffs, and they are being vanquished at the highest level. And so I think we're coming to the end of the hour now. I want to first thank Kathleen Stevenson so much. She is the AM Public Affairs Director, and a fond farewell to her. And also the engineer, Sam Parrish. The track that we heard throughout this show was Desdemona, and it was called Grace City, and it is off of her record, No Man's Land. This has been Waterworld, and you can look for updates and, again, the full interview with Beulah Walker on the website. It's www.kboo.fm/waterworld. And that's going to do it.
We clean this cube, wet paint Picassos. We speak truth to power. That's our motto. Black book Bibles, it's all we got. So we scribe these signs of life with the paint flow. The cement will suffocate you till you can't breathe. These walls are our canvas, so we make them speak. We paint trees on these streets, give you something you need. We occupy the city, oxygen to breathe. We take this great metropolis, we turn it up. Our eyes see a world, a shape greater than us. We're not invisible, but we got that X-ray touch. We bomb the city, yeah, we blowing it up. We throwing it up, piece for piece. They can cover us up, but the style don't cease. This is a rebel yell, a primal release, an ancient art form, the beauty of the beast.
In a city you can't see the stars, mistaking street lights for the heavens. But I used to drive out onto gravel roads, lie down on the hood of my car, and watch star after star fall and disappear. In the city, a different kind of star falls here.
Sleeps while we soldiers creep, splashing life onto the barriers, birth to breach. The powers that be can't see our reach. We defy all the lies they teach.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and communication requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032 and selecting extension 205. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee meets the second Wednesday of every month at 4:30 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kboo.org.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 9:59 a.m. For the 10 o'clock hour, we bring you Air Cascadia with your host, Chris Andre. Followed at 10:15 with Flashpoints. This is a rebroadcast of yesterday evening's episode. It's courtesy of KPFA and the Pacifica Network, and we thank them for making that available all the way down from Berkeley on the east side of the San Francisco Bay. At 11, a Radio Geekly dives into a discussion of the progressive movement within geek culture, chatting about the bending of gender roles, embracing LGBTQ and POC communities, and more. And thank you to KBOO members for all of your generous support. Those of you who called, pledging your financial investment in community radio, make sure to follow up on that. Consummate your relationship with the mighty 90.7 FM KBOO Portland.